NRP S2 E6, tools for 2D animation. Hey everybody, welcome back. This week we're going to be talking about one of my biggest passions, 2D animation, specifically some of the tools involved in it. Now, I know there's a lot of 3D fans and 3D is kind of the big thing. It's been that way ever since I started school. It was like, I think really when 3D really took off, I was in like 7th grade and Toy Story came out, and then, you know, Jurassic Park also really pushed 3D, but it was Toy Story. They're like, oh, this is the next thing, we're going to be doing this, and 2D kind of fell off the radar a little bit, and it's kind of been relegated to independent boutique studios use it. It's making some resurgence, like on the web, since it's more and more people have access to a lot of really good 2D software these days. It's easier for one individual animator to make a film by themselves. It's easier for students to produce things, and there's a lot of good work that's just, it's not blockbuster stuff right now, and I don't know. I'll have a whole episode dedicated to my thoughts on where the animation industry is and everything, but I'll talk about 3D stuff later in other posts too, because I think it's a good idea to be aware of the stuff that's out peripherally located to where you are. You know, I prefer 2D animation. It's what I'm passionate about. It's what I have trained a little bit and gotten my skill in drawing and everything. I try and focus on that. But I have respect for 3D, and I pay attention to what good apps there are out there for in case I need to use it. I try and be aware of the practices and how it's used, and I try to associate that because, in my opinion, it's good to have a good knowledge of disciplines, even if they're not specific to yours. Like, I mean, you could be a traditional painter and still take interest in sculpture, learn about Michelangelo. I mean, you know, he considered himself a sculptor, but he also really knew how to paint. So, and a lot of 3D animators, they also have very strong foundations in drawing, because you gotta create the characters and figure out what they look like before you can build them. I mean, some people just go to a 3D program and model, which, you know, you can go to a big block of marble and sculpt it too, but it's good to have an idea. It's a good thing to know things that are on the side. It's like, I pay attention to game making software on the side every now and again, just because I want to know what stuff's out there, and I don't know if I'll ever make a game. It's an interesting idea I'd like to pursue someday as a hobby, or maybe find somebody to code, or maybe come out with more software that makes it easier for people like me who, I understand coding to a degree, but I kind of get lost in it. And there's more software now that makes it easier for one person to make a game, and, you know, different things that say, oh, we're taking the coding out, but it's like, really, how much can you take out? They're getting better at it with programs like that. It's just like with website design, you know, they're making things easier to build sites without having to know all the coding. It's like, yeah, but you can't really, you're kind of stuck to just what's a template or, you know. But like I said, it's all about knowing things that are not exactly specific to what you do, but you can learn something. You pay attention to things that could be useful to your purposes. I mean, there are people that draw with things that you probably would never want to draw with or never assume to draw with, or maybe that works really well for them. I mean, Hendrix used a right-handed guitar flipped upside down. So, today I'd like to talk to you about tools for 2D animation. Now, I don't profess to be some expert in it. I profess to be a guy who's spent a lot of his time finding cheap ways to build up a studio, build up software, hardware, things in my, you know, for me to use. So that way, if I want to do something one way, you know, you can do a painting with oils or with acrylics or with pastels, or you can do it entirely digitally. And if you have the time to build up a studio and acquire things and find sales on softwares and sales on things, you know, you can put together a decent setup. And it's the same way with animation. You know, you have to decide what kind of work you want to do. Obviously, I mean, even if you're doing an all-digital setup, if you've got Cintiqs, if you've got whatever digitizing, you know, situation you want, I still recommend working with paper on some level, because it really, every time I work on on my computer for too long, if I go back to drawing on a piece of paper with a pencil, there's just something very human about the tactile sensation, and also, it kind of grounds you a little bit artistically. So, paper is always an important thing just to have in the studio, because it's easy to burn through some really cheap copy paper, or, you know, John Kay, he uses notebooks, legal pads, the yellow with the lines, because that way he doesn't care about what he's drawing, and he doesn't have to try and make something pristine. He can make notes and make scribbles of the characters and start eking it out from there. And it's good to have paper in the studio, so I always have any scraps of paper I've got. I'm a paper hoarder, I'll admit. Now, for animation that's 2D on paper, a lot of people, there's animation bond, you know, there's student level, and then there's hobbyist and stuff, and then there's professional things, and it really comes down to what your needs are and what your budget is, because professional level, like 12 field animation paper, you know, field is size, you know, the size of the paper, like student bond, it can often be like 8.5 by 11, or can be 12 field, 16 field, and in Europe they use the 15 field, which is kind of weird crossover issue, but you know, whole metric system, let's not even get into that. Animation bond paper, it's great, it's also a little prohibitively expensive. Now, if you're going to get it though, get it punched. Now, you can, it's easier to get these days, because when I went to school and studied animation for a while, which was going on 10 years ago, animation paper was a little hard to get. You had to order it. If you're going to order it pre-punched, because you can get it cheaper unpunched. But animation punches, the cheapest I have ever seen a professional animation punch go for is about $600. Acme, which is, you know, they use the name to signify animation specifically. The idea is that it steadies the paper. And you're going to want to have a good registration method if you're working in paper. And the Acme punch method, it's the most commonly used. I mean, there's a few variants here and there, but it's the most commonly used to get professional paper to get out there. And you can get it in sizes 8.5 by 11 or actual 12 field or 16 field, whatever strikes your fancy, how professional you want to work. But we're going to need to talk about scanners in a minute, but it's best to get it punched. Hole punches are expensive. Now, if you're going to work in your own studio by yourself, there's the round hole punch, because they sell peg bars. That's the main thing, that to keep all the animation paper registered and straight in line with each other over like sheets of hundreds of thousands, you're going to want a good peg bar. And a round hole punch, the problem with round hole punches is that office punches, they're supposed to be 1/4 inch round holes, and really most hole punches you'll find will make 9/32 of an inch or 11/32 of an inch, as opposed to a true 1/4. So it's a very small difference, and something you could be very nitpicky on, but when you're shooting a pencil test and your character jerks around a little bit, you're going to notice it. I mean, it depends on how much refining you do from the pencil test onward, but if you're working on paper, it can really get annoying. Let's talk about pencils. Now, you might say, well, why can't I just use a number 2? Some people do. Bill Plimpton uses regular color pencils and regular number 2 Ticonderoga pencils. Works great for him. I say, good on you, man. It's a cost-effective tool, and I like drawing with a number 2. The problem is, with me, and with a lot of artists, is that number 2 pencils, you get gray on gray, and so many marks after a while, you lose track of, it's not sketching so much as you're putting in shading and gradients and stuff, and you really want to draw in multicolored sketches, so that way you can work light to dark and build up, so like you can draw, say, a shape, you know, circles for the head and the torso and stuff like that, and then on a darker color, draw over that with details of like a shirt and where waistline is on figures. stuff like that, it makes it easier to work in layer. You know, it's a lot like in Photoshop, working with layers on top of layers. If you do some really light sketching with a light color and then go over with a darker blue or a green. So I prefer to use Cole Erase because they're a fairly standard animation pencil, and they're also run by Prismacolor makes them, so they're pretty easy to come by and inexpensive, and I think they have the easiest draw and erase ability, because a lot of color pencils, you draw them once and then you've got to scratch up your paper to erase it. A really popular brand of pencil people like Glenn Keane would animate with the Blackwing 602, which, you know, Chuck Jones was a huge fan of these. I mean, you'll find odes to these from all kinds of lamenting people when they went out of stock. It's kind of like that story about Charles Schulz. When his favorite pen nib went out of production, he bought the remaining stock and had crates of them, and then after he passed away, his family distributed the remaining ones to the artists that used that nib. Pencils, though, I myself use Cole Erase. The Blackwing, it was discontinued, but it was brought back by like a tribute model. Another company got the name and they've made it closer to the original. And yeah, I mean, it's you can say it's snobby to talk about kind of pencil, but when it's your tool that you work with, find what works for you. Because again, nobody is an expert. I mean, something that might work might work for somebody that's crazy expensive, you might find the cheapest alternative and go, I like this. Or you might buy something else that you really like, and if you can afford it, or if you think it helps your work, great. Just don't fetishize your tools, because there's not like one magical pencil that will make you draw exactly like Chuck Jones. You know, he had his own thing that worked for him. I know plenty of people use different levels of sketch pencils. Some people use different leads. Find what works for you. And speaking of things that work, light boxes. Now, this is another thing that I got one when I started in art school studying in animation, because, you know, it's great. They have animation tables in the school, which is great if you're there. But if it's like 4 a.m. and you're zonking out, it's best to have your own light box in your apartment or your dorm or whatever to be able to do stuff. Plus, if you're just an artist doing comic illustrations, doing any kind of work where you want to work on extra different pieces of paper, redraw things, then a light box is a good investment. I got the Light Tracer. The Light Tracer 2 would work better for professional sized animation because it's bigger, but I mean, I was going in for the cheapest that I could find. You can build light boxes. I know people who don't even have them. People have I said, what's your light box? They're like, the window and the sun. it's like a lot of people, they'll just use like a glass from a photo frame and a light bulb. I've seen people use Tupperware. I'll link you to tutorials on Instructables on how to build your own light box real cheap. You can also go to animationdesks.com. There's this fellow in Canada who makes them $200, and you know, I got mine in the mail, and I was like, wow, this is, for what I paid to have something this big shipped to me from Canada, and I don't know how he makes a profit on them, but hey, these things are nice. They come with animation discs, which, you know, basically it's a hole in the desk, but then a big plastic disc that's a little bit bigger, and you can shine a light through it, and you can pick it up and rotate it, because actual animation discs, I look at them, and I kind of lust after them a little bit, but animation discs, the nicest you'll find is like, I mean, you might find one used, but really you're expecting to pay about $300 for a good one new-ish, so, I mean, you can make your own. Again, you know, if you're doing this all for yourself in the confines of your own studio, you know, you can make your own things, depending on if you're good with a saw and wood and stuff like that, you know, feel free to put together stuff. But if you're wanting to transfer to any kind of system, especially if you're doing pencil tests with software that has optical registration that recognizes peg holes, you're going to want to have something standard. You know, and if you just buy animation paper pre-punched and get a peg bar from Chromacolor or Cartoon Supplies, you know, that's affordable. You know, a peg bar is extremely cheap. You can pick up like a pack of pencils and a peg bar and like it's like $20. So I recommend going for a standard. And the nice thing about this is if you buy, say you got the desk from animationdesks.com, which is what I did, I got one with an Acme punched peg bar glued into it. I also went and I bought a three-hole punch peg bar, and I taped it to the other side, so I rotated the disc so that way I can work in either format. I mean, of course, I probably wouldn't want to have two peg bars that might cut up my wrist or something. Anyway, they're plastic, it's fine. Now let's talk about pencil tests. Now, you're going to want to have a good document scanner. I mean, you can have the little, like the Cano scan or whatever, this little one, but you're going to end up having a peg bar, and like, because you've got to lay each time it down, you have to lay it down registered, you have to tape the peg bar to it, and lay down a sheet, and lay down a sheet. I mean, when I was in college, what I would do is I had a webcam, and I had this clamp lamp, you know, the kind that clamped to your desk. I took the wiring and all that stuff out so it was just the arm, and I ran the webcam through the clamp arm, and I just sat that over my light box when I would be sitting in my dorm room the night before a project was due, and I'd be taking some pencil tests that way. And that's good. Yeah, that's good for a quick thing, like for a class assignment. Now, if you're wanting to do a professional, you know, if you're wanting to scan it in to clean it up digitally or something, say you've got a nice Wacom tablet or a Cintiq or something at home, or some variant, because there's other alternatives out there nowadays. But say you've got that and you want to clean up, you might want to invest in a document scanner. The Brother MFC 6490CW is what I have. I think it's been retired and replaced by a similar number. But the Brother 3-in-1 scanner fax printer that does tabloid size scanning, it's what I've got. And it, for the price it was, I got it refurbished online. And for a wireless device that this size, it works great. Now, I'm going to link you guys to some videos about setting it up for the automatic document feeder, because the thing is about doing pencil tests, if it's just laying one on top of the other, that works fine for a really short cycle, but if you're doing like 30 drawings or more, it's best to get a feeder, and you're going to have to make, if you're going to scan stuff in and then have the software recognize the images and the optical, again, the registration, the peg holes, you're going to want to tape some black along the scanner. And like I said, I've got a tutorial somebody made on YouTube. I'll link you to that and also blog about my comments on it. And yeah, it's a pretty long system. But anyway, pencil tests. So let's talk about software to make pencil tests. I think, personally, probably the best software I've used for pencil testing is DigiCell Flipbook. I used this in college, and I've used it since, and I like it. I even bought, like, a big beefed-out version, because they have paint, you know, they have coloring tools and levels of effects and layering and a whole bunch of different things, and it also handles sound and stuff, but as for just a pencil test software, it's very quick. It's good for pencil tests. Toon Boom also makes a number of programs, like a lot of programs. I think Pencil Check Pro is the name of their current cheapest pencil testing program. But I mean, I go with DigiCell because it's like $50, I think. And it's a nice pencil testing software. There's also free software. There's Monkey Jam and Toki Line Test and a number of others. I mean, since now that I've got mine, I haven't really looked into it. I try to look into what software is out while I have something, just in case something better comes along that might be free. Like I said, be aware of the peripherals. Periphery? Anyway, let's talk about animation packages. Now, this is all about the kind of animation that you intend on doing. If you're going to be doing traditional, full Disney-style animation, you can do this with all these different programs I'm mentioning, but there's things built into each software package that are designed to speed things up and make them easier for you if you're working in a particular workflow and style. For example, Flash. This is popular now because it was one of the first really animation softwares that kind of hit the prime time. But the thing is, Flash is really even, you know, as much as Adobe's been, when they got Macromedia and they got Flash and they've been doing things for it, it's kind of been moving towards a programming kind of world where you can make interactive menus for websites and stuff like that, and that's really what it's designed for. You can animate with it. C-Lab 2021, done in Flash. My Little Pony Friendship is Magic, I believe is Flash. There's a lot of good programs made in it, but it's not the... There's add-ons and all kinds of plugins and things that make it easier, and I know people that work in it, but, you know, especially since my copy of Flash is getting kind of old, I really don't want to be tied down to it. I don't particularly use it, but, I mean, the format, there's the Flash file format, the SWF, so there's Flash, and it's primarily used in the cutout puppet animation method, which, as opposed to every frame, or every two frames, or however your timing goes, you draw each character. With Flash, the idea is that you make a character, and you make a puppet, and then you can move and switch drawings and objects, and make them move that way. Now, this doesn't mean that it has to look cheap. I mean, there's the argument, limited animation in the 60s, you had the Flintstones using less drawings, and yet they still managed to make it look alright because they had style and they knew what they were doing with it. So, that's Flash. Another good program to use, Toon Boom, Animate Pro, and Harmony are real professional level tools. There's also Studio, which I've seen a few. I think Ralph Bakshi uses Studio, I'm not sure. And Toon Boom, I like a little bit better than Flash in the drawing tools because it's actually designed to draw. You know, the brush in Flash is a little hard to work with because the size of the brush matters on how zoomed in you are to the screen versus Toon Boom, it actually has an adjustable brush size. It's a little bit more configurable and the brush tips are a little bit better in Toon Boom. And there's also in how it handles exporting files, importing files. It's less clunky than Flash. And John Kay from the creator of Ren and Stimpy, he really, really likes Toon Boom. There's also TV Paint. Now, this is fairly popular, I believe, in Europe. I mean, it's been slowly gaining some traction in the U.S. I think it's primarily bitmap-oriented because you can make animations that look like they were done in oil paints, really nice pencil textures. But the thing about TV Paint is I'm a little bit confused by the interface. I can tell it's a good product, but I haven't had time to really sink into it. Then there's the program Redis Pro. Redis? It's often used in anime. It's a nice suite of programs for scanning drawings in, inking, coloring. It's a program that I have had no experience with because I think it's mostly used in Korea. Another software that I should mention, Anime Studio, it's also a puppet-based animations program, similar to Toon Boom. I've seen people do some really nice South Park-style animations. Three really nice free animation softwares out there. Synfig Studio, which I have not had much of an opportunity to play with, but it looks very robust for a free program. Kind of like how GIMP has evolved out past my skill of using when I haven't had time to tinker with it. Then there's also Pencil, which is a very nice beta program, at least it was in beta when I was using it, for free animating. It has vector and bitmap layers. The only problem I had with it was it would crash. It would crash my drivers for my tablet, and it's like, well, I'm working strictly digitally right now, so that's kind of a problem. I can't use this right now. Also, Plastic Animation Paper went totally free. Plastic Animation Paper, it's a free program, it's good, I'll have some examples in the blog. I just haven't used it because I've been working in other things. So, but I'm letting you people know about it, that it's free and you should check it out. Anyway, that's going to wrap up this episode. Stay tuned for the next one, where I'm going to show you some of my own examples of work that I did when I was in college. Oh boy, I feel sad saying that already. But I'm going to give you some examples of my pencil test that I did. I'm also going to talk to you about exercises and lessons and the ideas behind actually animating. So stay tuned for that, and I'll see you all on the other side. More, visit NoRightsProductions.com. Follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/NoRights. And hey, why don't you check out my Tumblr at NoRights.tumblr.com.